Tim Conway died yesterday, the impish second banana to Carol Burnett, who won 4 Emmy Awards on her TV variety show, starred aboard McHale's Navy, and later voiced the role of Barnacle Boy for SpongeBob SquarePants. He was 85. Besides his Emmys with Carol Burnett, Conway got 2 more for guest appearances on the shows Coach and 30 Rock. He also had a modest but steady movie career, appearing in such films as The Apple Dumpling Gang, and one of my favorite films of all time, and if you've never seen it, you really should. It's called Roll, Freddy, Roll, about a guy who wants to impress his son and get into the Guinness Book of World Records by spending the most amount of time on roller skates. Stir, mix, enjoy. I spoke with Tim Conway in 2010 in advance of a performance at Proctor's Theater in Schenectady. Widely considered a bit of a class clown, I asked him if he saw himself that way.
I started that rumor, yes, many years ago. Well, it's strange. You know, I never really wanted to be in this business. I started out to be a jockey. I know that's crazy because at this weight, even horses ask you to get off. But my dad was training horses in Cleveland, so that was going to be my life. And if I hadn't fallen off as much as I did, I think I probably would have still been in that area. And then I went in the Army, and of course they had no sense of humor, so I got a couple of extra months tagged onto my time for screwing around in the Army. But I don't know. I just happened to wander into show business, and now here I am.
Did a lot of work in Cleveland, and then I guess the big break was the Steve Allen Show.
Yes. Rosemarie from the Dick Van Dyke Show was wandering through town, and I was at another station at the time, at Channel 8, with a guy named Ernie Anderson, and he was the talent, and I was the director of the show, and I had never directed, and he had very little talent, so the show was a mess. And she saw it, and she said, "That's the funniest show I've ever seen." And I said, "Well, we're really fighting for our lives here." And she said, "I'm going to take some of this stuff back to Steve and show him." So she did. The producer of McHale's Navy happened to see that show that night and called me up and said, "Did you want to come out and do McHale's Navy?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Excuse me?" I said, "No." I said, "We're doing this crazy show here." I said, "It is so bad, it's hysterical. So I think I'll just stick around here." And actually, the guy, the station manager, fired me because he said, "You got to go out and do this. This is crazy." So I did.
I'm telling you, I'm so mad. I could...
Oh, put that grenade away, will you, Chuck?
Yeah, well, Skip, I lost something.
What?
The pin. You know, it goes in here.
I know where it goes. Throw it. It's a live one.
Is that an order?
That's an order. Throw it.
All right, you're wasting government property, though.
Throw it. Everybody.
And that's how I ended up doing that, and now here I am.
You go out and you do McHale's Navy, and
right.
It's a classic sitcom. It's you, Ernest Borgnine, Carl Ballantyne, Joe Flynn, and the rapport that you have with Joe Flynn is just fantastic.
Oh, he was a funny, funny guy. He really was. He was a pleasure to work with.
You see, the bluebird of happiness is fluttering over me.
Oh, that's not a bluebird, sir. That's a mosquito. Here, I'll get it.
Huh?
Well, they're getting bigger out here.
Are you a vicious little monster, you? I got it. Not you, Chucky. I mean, the mosquito.
Oh,
oh, you're quick with your hands, aren't you? Because you give it. You are.
Yeah.
Oh, you're.
Watch this.
Yeah. Oh, isn't that marvelous?
You know, I ended up with a guy like Ernie Borgnine. You know, an Oscar winner from Marty to Fatso Judson. I mean, that's the alpha omega of acting. And he was so kind to me because I knew nothing about the business. As far as, you know, I just knew there was a camera there. I took speech and dramatics at Bowling Green State University, where I went for 11 years. Awfully hard to get through that school, I'll tell you. And they said there wasn't even television station there at that time, but they had a cardboard box with a toilet roll at the end, and they said, you know, someday this will take pictures, and they would push that around, you know, and I thought it was very cheap to get a camera that way, and I just, you know, wandered through school, and then I came out and happened to fall into a job at KYW in Cleveland, and I guess I stayed in show business rather than the toilet roll business.
When we were talking to Carol Burnett, when she was on the show, one of the things that surprised me, and I guess I knew this, but you didn't become a regular on the Carol Burnett show
right.
Until the 9th season. You were a co-star. You were a regular guest star.
Right.
And the joke was that your license plate read 13 weeks because
that's correct.
That's because out of all the pilots, that's about how long they lasted.
That's right. Then when they started just giving you a season for six shows, then I changed it to 6 weeks because mine was being canceled at the end of 6 weeks. But sometimes I would be canceled in the morning and then picked up on another show in the afternoon. So I never really experienced that time off very much.
Do you think about that? I mean, do you ever try to analyze why that never struck for you?
Well, I never was comfortable having my own show. I love going in and just horsing around and doing somebody else's show. And then they have all the problems of the bills and who's on the show and all of that nonsense. But no, I'm very comfortable in what I do. And, you know, just to go in and George Slaughter used to call me the comedy ambulance because whenever he was doing Laugh-In or any of those shows and somebody would drop out, he would call me at home and say, can you come over here and do some stuff for us? So I'd jump in the car and go do it. And then that's the way I guess I've always been in the business.
When you were on the Burnett Show, then even as a guest, a regular guest on the program, after a while, of course, you have to become comfortable with your surroundings.
Right. Well, it was pretty hard not to become comfortable with Carol. And I mean, she's probably the most generous star you'll ever run into as far as letting whoever else is doing something funny really do that. Most stars will say, if that's funny, I'll be doing it.
Mrs. Wiggins, do you have any idea to what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think so.
And that's close enough.
Carol was just great, and she loved the fact that it was done almost live. We only taped it once, and that was on Friday, and that was the show. And whatever you got, you got. So that's why Harvey, who was also a very poor performer, I can't believe how many times he would just laugh during a sketch. Very annoying as far as I was concerned, because I come from the Shakespeare class. And we just, you know, I was a writer on the show, so I'd write one thing and then never say it. So Harvey would just stand there and go, where are we going with this, you know?
Look, doctor, please listen to me. I have a terrible toothache. I am in terrible pain. I want you to do something to stop the pain, either fill the tooth or pull it.
Oh, gosh. Why, C's. C's? Yeah, see, in dental school, in filling and pulling, I only got C's. That was just kind of an average grade. I got A's in cleaning, though. You want me to clean it for you?
Will it stop the pain?
No, but it'll look great.
The reason I became a regular, Carol had asked me early on when she came out to do 2-3 shows a year. Then it got to be 10, and then finally she said, I want you to be a regular on the show, which they were doing 33 a year. And I said, well, I have to leave time off. So in case I do a movie or something. So I said, I'd like 1 week off. So I'll just do 32 a year. So I was just doing 32 a year, and I had 1 week off. But I would also used to guest during my week off on her show. So in reality, I guess I was doing all of them. Yeah.
Doing the show, right.
Right.
And the movies that you were doing at that time, you did a lot of Disney movies. You did a lot with Don Knotts.
Yeah.
The Apple Dumpling Gang.
Uh-huh.
For goodness sakes.
Yes. Well, I met Don when I first came out to do Steve Allen. Steve Allen was my favorite show when it was an hour and 45 minutes from New York, and he had Don Knotts, Louie Nye, Tom Poston, the men on the street, and it was just a great show and a great approach to what the kind of humor I really enjoyed, and it was mostly ad-lib. So when I got to work with Don, it was great, you know, and I wrote a couple of movies for The Prize Fighter and Private Eyes for Don and I, and they were very successful. And then we did a lot of stuff for Disney together, the Apple Dumpling Gangs and everything. But Don was just fantastic. And oftentimes we would talk about, you know, our outlook on show business and what we really anticipated doing for and in show business. And we always agreed on the fact that we'd never do anything with language or nudity. God only knows I wouldn't want to see Don with any nudity. And we just said, you know, the audience doesn't anticipate anything but good, clean humor when we're doing something. And he said, you have to, you don't have to, but he said, that's what they expect and that's what you should deliver to them because they're the ones who are, you know, you're responsible to. So I've always maintained that that would be my outlook on life and the business, and I never really varied much.
Did you have to bring so many pigeons?
You might have to send a lot of messages back to the yard.
I wish you could find a cleaner way to send a message.
I'm working on it. Bring the time gun?
Yeah, I've got it. This isn't one of your better inventions. Never heard of a gun that went off every hour.
It might save your life someday.
Yeah, if you have to shoot someone every hour.
By the way, you better turn it off. It's almost 3 o'clock. Too late.
Don Knotts was an incredible character.
Oh, wasn't he, though? Yeah, and he was just like that in real life. I mean, I used to, I drove him to work a lot of times when we were down in Atlanta because he was always complaining in the morning, you know, boy, that air conditioning dim, boy, I'll tell you, that's really going to get me a cold. So I would drive him to work, and he would complain all the way to work. And so one day I just recorded it, him complaining all the way to work. And then the next day he started with the, you know, that air conditioning. And I said, just a minute, Don, let me just play this back for you. And then I just play that for him every morning. Then I wouldn't have to listen to him, and he could listen to himself.
You look at who you've been paired with, though, of Tim Conway and Don Knotts, Tim Conway and Harvey Korman, Tim Conway and Carol Burnett. I mean, you have been blessed with some wonderful partnerships. And
oh, absolutely, yeah.
This is why I was asking the question of being comfortable on a show that you're guesting on. There has to be a tremendous amount of trust for that to work.
Yes, it does, yes. Yeah, you have to kind of know what you're doing, obviously. And yes, you take a lot of chances, you know, but I guess that's the difference between knowing what you're doing and not knowing what you're doing. But you're absolutely right. A lot of times I try stuff on the Burnett Show, and Harvey would just stare at me like, what are you doing, you know? So a lot of times it works, a couple of times it didn't, you know, but for the most part, it always worked. You know, the audience knew what we were doing, and you have that communication. You know, they're looking for it, and so you deliver.
We spoke with Tim Conway in 2010 on the Roundtable. The performer died yesterday at the age of 85. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.